This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
I have beer.
Me too!
It's a Cascadian Dark Ale with Cascade and Centennial hops called Groundbreaker, 100% gluten-free craft beer.
Interesting. I have a Hopium IPA. And the little label looks like one of those like Soviet era propaganda posters. It's awesome looking. It's awesome looking.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Yeah, I got good. This. We went to my brother-in-law's for Thanksgiving. We had gone there in October for my nephew's 7th birthday party, and this is the first birthday party that he had where, like, his, you know, peers from school were there.
Mm-hmm.
So there were more parents and stuff like that, and there was a cooler of beer, and of course I couldn't have any, and I didn't bring any because, like, who wants to be the dick that brings beer to a party that nobody's having beer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need it anyways. So, but then going to Thanksgiving, I got to plan out all kinds of stuff. So, like, I had to bring a dessert if I wanted something I could eat, all kinds of stuff like that. So I brought several food items. And I went ahead and grabbed a beer because I was like, if other people are having a beer, like, it would be nice for me to at least have the option.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, nobody drank at Thanksgiving.
Sure.
So I'm drinking it now.
Very nice. We took
very hoppy.
We took nothing for Thanksgiving because the place where we went to, they always have a bunch of booze and food. Well, actually, we had to take sweet tea. But that's it.
You went to a bar for Thanksgiving and you drank tea and vodka in the bathroom to get drunk for cheaper, didn't you?
No, we went to my wife's aunt and uncle's house, and it was awesome. It was freaking delicious. But I will say, sweet tea vodka, also delicious.
I don't know shit about
vodka. And I bet it's gluten-free, so you can have some.
It's made out of potatoes, isn't it?
Vodka, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, dude, it's so good. It's terrible, though. because, like, if by itself, it's fine. But if you put it in a glass with ice and you add, like, a tablespoon of sugar, it tastes just like McDonald's sweet tea, which is really bad if you're drinking booze, you know? Because you have, like, a couple. And all of a sudden, you're a little tipsy, and you didn't even realize it, because it just feels like you're drinking tea. For the Northerners, iced tea. The Southerners know what's up. The sweet tea.
Sweet tea is just iced tea with a crap load of sugar in it. It's nothing special. It's just over-sweetening your beverage.
Correct. I remember when I first moved down south, and I saw somebody make sweet tea for the first time. I said, I can't drink that. It's got like 5 cups of sugar in it.
Yeah, no, I was actually raised on that stuff because both sides of my family have roots in the South, so there's that influence coming in both directions. So my mom used to make sun tea with just copious amounts of sugar in it.
Mm-hmm. Sun tea's got lemon in it too, right?
Well, sun tea is just the process of making it. Like, you put it in a jar in the sun.
Oh, that's right.
She eventually stopped doing that because they said don't do that because bacteria grows.
Yeah, bacteria grows regardless.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see people making sun tea anymore, though. But yeah, she used to do that. She had like a I don't know what the hell you'd call it. A carafe? A decanter? Not a decanter.
A carafe.
Yeah, but it was like a big glass container that had like a tap on the bottom to dispense from, you know?
Yeah.
And so she would, put the tea in water, and I don't know if she added the sugar, but I think she added the sugar after removing the tea bags. But I couldn't tell you for sure. It's been decades.
Mm.
But I remember her doing that all the time, leaving it out there in the sun for hours to steep. And I don't know why the hell anybody would do that in the first place, but that's what they did. I grew up on that.
That's cool. Yep. I guess, I don't know. I guess tea's always been kind of instant. You just got to let it sit for 5 minutes. But maybe if you don't want to boil water, you can just leave it in the sun. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, it probably does do something different. Because just like with coffee, if you make cold brew, you just add ground coffee to room temperature water and let it sit for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So it does get out a different flavor. It's a different process. But I would imagine it would do something the same, but I couldn't tell you because I haven't had it in forever, so I have no idea.
Hmm. Now, people are listening to this and they're like, what the hell does this have to do with Valiant Comics? I'm going to tell you right now. Because see, Paul, the genius of this podcast is we start talking some random bullshit, but at some point, it makes sense.
Yeah, because everybody should know that Bloodshot loves sweet tea.
No, Paul, because I wanted to talk about Ninja K, number one. And we all know the British love them some tea.
Yeah, I don't know if they love sweet tea, though.
They don't love sweet tea. They like Earl Grey tea. They like breakfast tea. And matter of fact, that's what I've been drinking for the last couple of weeks. I'm trying not to drink coffee. So I've switched to mostly tea, and it's been awesome. But my wife got me a mix of teas, and they're all black teas. So, of course, there's a bunch of Earl Grey, Lady Grey's, Irish breakfast tea, English breakfast tea, which, by the way, there's no difference. If you look up the ingredients for English and Irish, they're both just black tea.
You know the difference is? Racism.
It's all about racism. No, I finally got to read Ninja K number one. Did you read it?
I still have not. I need to get caught up on my Valiant Comic reading. I did look at it and read the first few pages when we were recording with those VCR fools.
Oh, those guys.
I'm very excited about reading it, but I just I've been making a transition. There's been changes in my life. I am switching drastically to the digital side.
Yes.
So I spent a good amount of time pounding through some readings so I could get some books on their merry way to other folk.
Nice.
So I read all of Echo over the course of a few days. Got that sent off to Sparky along with a bunch of other stuff. I read Roughneck by Jeff Lemire. Mm-hmm. Got that sent off to Jay. Then I was nearing the end of the duration on some reading material from Hoopla. So I finished reading the first book of 100 Bullets, which it's like the 100 Bullets volumes they have on Hoopla for free download.
Mm-hmm.
They're like 20 issues each. They're crazy.
Nice.
So yeah, it's not these like dinky little 4 or 5 issue trades. It's like the big fat collections, and you know. So yeah, I finished that up. Honestly, 100 Bullets, it's not bad, but I could leave it as much as I could take it too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've read 100 Bullets before. But,
I have. It's been a while though.
Yeah, there's a lot of things about the style that I mean, it's good. It you know. There's some things that are about it that like make it stand out enough to be worth reading, but like I wouldn't really recommend it to people for my tastes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if they had it, I'd say read it. I wouldn't say go out of your way to get it, but anyways.
Fair enough.
I digress. But yeah, so I need to catch up in Valiant. I've gotten a bunch of stuff settled down now. Part of the reason I was rushing is there were some good Comixology Black Friday sales, so I purchased all of the Usagi Yojimbo Saga Omnibuy on Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
And am doing away with the physical copies.
Nice.
A good chunk of those are going to Sparky.
Nice.
And I flipped my Mind Management hardcovers to Aaron for basically what it would take me to be able to pick them up digitally. So it was a great deal for him because I knew he wanted the physicals. And I was able to switch it over to digital. But yeah, so I was doing a lot of hustling with that stuff.
Nice. By the way, shout out to Sparky. He's got his own podcast now.
I know. I really wish I listened to other people's podcasts. I could listen to it.
They put the first episode out. Well, I posted it last night because I wanted to make sure I could submit it to iTunes and all that.
Uh-huh.
So it's in iTunes now. It was approved this afternoon. You can get it on Google Play Music. It's on Stitcher. TuneIn should be later on in the week because they're a little slow. But yeah, you can go to nerdlegion.com/podcast/T as in Tom, B as in boy, T as in turtle, and check out the first episode, in which they talk mostly about Star Wars.
And it was awesome. I'll have to give it a little bit of a listen. Also, on the downside of the fact that I usually don't listen to podcasts from anybody that I know anymore, I don't give many shits about Star Wars either.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
But you know what? The interesting thing with Star Wars, as far as I'm, you know, as far as me, is like I appreciate what the first one did, the first trilogy, you know, the first one in particular, what it accomplished, you know, how they got it made, all that kind of stuff. I can enjoy it, but it's not like I love it. But the thing is, like, my son, as he gets older and starts getting interested in stuff, like, I actually am hoping he gets interested in Star Wars, because then I can really get interested in it, because I'll have somebody to share it with.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on my own, I don't have enough impetus to really get into it, you know?
Fair enough.
So, it's, I'm a free agent. I could like it, I could not like it, you know? It's, it could go either way here.
Yep. No, I gotcha. Yeah, it was good. I listened to it today. It was a lot of fun. His cousin is hilarious. But
yeah, I'll have to give it a listen. I like to know what people sound like, because everybody knows what I sound like, and I have no clue what other people sound like. So it gives you a little bit of perspective on them. You know, you talk to people online with text all the time.
Sure.
It only gives you so much of a sense of who they are.
Sure.
You know, like finally talking to Dwan after, you know, talking with him so much online. Plus, I mean, with him, you don't even know what he looks like, because he doesn't have any social media presence.
Well, I know what he looks like, because I met him in Chicago.
Yeah, but even that took you a long time.
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
So are we doing, we're doing a VCP here? I thought we were just going to do a patron episode.
No, we're not doing that yet.
The fuck? That's what we were going to do. You're going to release a panel.
Now they're
getting live content?
I thought we had agreed. Because I didn't finish reading the book.
That's fine. No, we could just do a straight up VCP. But no, what we agreed on was that we were going to talk about the first volume of Criminal tonight. For a patron episode. And you were going to release the panel as this week's VCP episode. That's fine.
Well, congratulations, listeners. You get two episodes this week. Because the panel went out this morning. And
but you get no Criminal.
No Criminal. Shout out to Jack DeMayo for recording that and letting me post it. You can go to comicbookinvest.com and check out that site out. By the way, I heard the Collecting Valiant guys referencing you also. I'm assuming because of Jack's involvement, they're talking a little bit about, Collecting Valiant Comics over at Comic Book Invest. Because I was listening to the last episode, which was actually pretty freaking hilarious. I don't know if you heard it, but Brian Wells showed up on there.
So I have heard.
Yes, it was hilarious. Brian is hilarious. We should have had him on here a long time ago. if you don't know who Brian is, just go find him. He's at ShadowSip on Twitter. I can't remember his name on the Valiant Fans forum. I think it's Better Than Ezra. God, that dude's funny. And they had so many stories. Remember how we got in trouble like a year or two ago for posting stories? Actually, you know what? It was when we talked to Dysart. Remember that?
I didn't get in anything. I was fine.
All right, I got in trouble. But yeah, there were some similar stories on there, man. I don't know. So go check out the latest Collecting Valiant, and you can listen to that. It's freaking awesome. But
it's nice to hear that they finally have done their second episode after being alive for a year.
Well, you know, Dewan wants his 23 cents. So, you know, they got to record at least once a year.
Yeah, you know, I mean, their dues are a fuck of a lot more than that, though, so it's not really working out in their favor. Dewan, we're waiting on our $100 for your dues for the year.
Oh, man. Poor guy. I told him, I said, you're not getting your 23 cents till you record at least one episode a month. He threatened to unionize. I told him he can shove it.
Yep.
He can shove it.
And he hired me to go bust up that union. Got a lot of people walking funny after I broke some kneecaps.
Well, you are the pig killer, so.
I am.
Yeah, there's that. But so you haven't read it, and that's fine. I'll do a non-spoilery little thing on Ninja K. The art's fantastic, by the way.
But yeah, I looked through the art, so man, it's good.
Yeah, the art's fantastic.
I'm very excited about this. I know I haven't read it yet, so it's easy for me to say how excited I am when I've had the opportunity to read it for God knows how long now.
But, well, so here's the thing. I might go on to say it's my favorite single issue that Valiant has done this year. And it might even be my favorite, most favorite, my favoritist issue of Valiant in quite a while, maybe even a few years. It was really, really fantastic. And there's a lot of reasons for that. So the way that the story is being set up, there's a lot of narration throughout the issue. Matter of fact, I would say maybe like the first two-thirds is mostly narration, or at least the first half. But there's something about it that the way that it's done didn't really bother me. Because I feel like sometimes when you do a lot of narration, it gets really wordy. But this didn't feel wordy at all. It's like everything that was said made perfect sense to what was being shown on the page. And not everything was just like pure exposition either. You know, like there were some cool, like fun facts about like the history of ninjas. And there was some interesting stuff with how they connected it to like World War One and World War Two, and even beyond that. There's a lot of really interesting setup for villains that we've never seen. Like, there's a Madame Charade is a character that pops up a few times. And she was Ninja D's arch nemesis in the late 50s, early 60s. And it almost seemed like very much like a James Bond type of story, and they only hinted at it in the first issue, but I'm sure we're going to see a whole lot more of that, because at the end of the issue there's a lot on Madame Charade, and she's basically a shapeshifter, is the feeling that I got. But man, it was so good, and I got to say the way that Ninja gets introduced here is, I think, unlike anything Valiant has done since 2012. It's completely fresh, and it was really, really impressive, man. And in some ways, it gave me... I know how you feel about the old 90s stuff. I know some of it kind of wore you out because it was maybe a little repetitive or, you know...
Well, there's a lot of good stuff, too. I mean, you know, I'm looking in hindsight...
Sure, right.
...at a large body of work and also consuming that work quickly. So, I by no means am I condemning the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
other than the fact that the 90s are just terrible decade.
So, it was a fantastic decade. The best decade, I would say. did you read the original Ninjak series?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, for those of you that haven't read it, it's 26 issues, technically 28, because there's 26 issues, and then there's a zero issue, and there's a double zero issue, a 00, because Valiant's edgy, so they can do that. Man, we should talk about old stuff sometime again, man. I miss doing our Ivar's Long Box with Josh. But, so it was 26 and then the 20 issues. And what was really good about that story, first of all, the art was, I would say, among the best, especially the early issues of that series, among the best that Valiant did in those years. It was, there was a lot of Joe Quesada stuff, who is now at Marvel, not doing any comics, he's doing TV stuff for him. And Jimmy Palmiotti was his art partner, who was at Marvel for a while, because Marvel bought Jimmy and Joe. That's a story for a different day. But now has been at DC for quite a while, doing Harley Quinn with his wife, Amanda Connor. And he's doing some other stuff now. He just launched the Jetsons comic, which, oh my God, Paul, you should read it. When it comes out on trade, I'll let you know, and you can look it up on Hoopla. That Jetsons comic was freaking awesome. Freaking awesome. I was amazed at what he did with the Jetsons. I know not a lot of people agree with me, but still, it was freaking awesome. Anyway, so it was those two guys, some of the most iconic covers of any run that Valiant has ever done also. Matter of fact, I think one of the variants for Ninja K, I want to say it's the first issue, I should have looked that up, but one of the variants is an homage to the Chromium cover for Ninjak number 1 from the 90s. I think 94 is when it came out, maybe. Freaking awesome. Fantastic book. And what was really great about that book, if you remember, is that it was an espionage book. It was like a spy thriller. And the main villain was Dr. Silk, pretty much through the whole thing. Actually, it was... what was the organization he had? Something Web.
Webnet.
Webnet. It started off with the Webnet thing, and then it turns out that Dr. Silk was the one guiding Webnet. And so Silk was very prominent throughout the whole series. And in this Ninja K number 1, man, they talk about Dr. Silk a couple times, which is really awesome. And like going back to Ninja D in 1957, they mentioned Dr. Silk. So I really like the scope of the story in this first issue. And Paul, oh God, I should have just told you to read it before we started this.
Yeah, that probably would have been a useful thing.
Well, you know, I figured after we recorded our 150th episode and it came up in conversation that you would read it. So,
well, see, I decided that I would start from the beginning. So I've been reading, you know, all 5+ years of Valiant Comics since the relaunch. I'm on issue 1 of Exo Manowar right now. I've been taking my time with it. I want to soak it all in.
Now that is one of the best Valiant comics of all time. Anyways, I was floored, Paul, I gotta say. I feel like I've been a little down on Valiant lately. And I think with good reason. And I think when you and I shit on things, we don't do it because we like to shit on things. I mean, we do like to shit on things. But it's also because we love the company, and that's why we started this podcast. And I just haven't been feeling that for a little while. I was hoping the XR relaunch would give me some of that back, and it did in some respects. But I was talking to somebody, I can't remember who I was talking to, maybe Aaron, a couple days ago. As good as Matt's run on XO has been so far, I still feel like Venditti's run is more iconic.
Well, you know, it's just like I've said before, like one of the things that Secret Weapons had the ability to do that XO couldn't do is it can be fresh and new and drastically different and like bring a lot of things that something that's already established can't. Now with Ninjak, you can argue, well, Ninjak has been represented, he's had a series. I don't know though, like I think Ninjak there's a lot more opportunity for bringing something different than there is with XO. I mean, XO has been kind of explored from the beginning thoroughly, whereas Ninjak has had certain things shown to you throughout his life, but like it's never just been here's the biography of Ninjak from the beginning, which is kind of how they approached XO.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
You know, Ninjak, there's a lot more opportunity for that. I think they're, you know, as much as like, you know, even if you didn't think the whole series was the greatest, there, you know, parts of the Ninjak series were really great. It's not the seminal series. It's not, you know, like if this iteration of Valiant keeps on making comics for 30 years. 30 years down the road, we're not going to look back at different things and say, you know, the Matt Kent, the first series of Ninjak, that was like the seminal Ninjak. There's probably going to be something else. You know, just like look at Eternal Warrior. Nobody's going to look back at the first run of Eternal Warrior that was the two arcs that were like drastically different, and one of them was kind of like, let's forget that happened.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to look at that as like the seminal Eternal Warrior. They're going to look at this point, like either Wrath of the Eternal Warrior or Book of Death, you know, would be the key Eternal Warrior things.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably say Wrath over Book of Death, but yeah, no, I agree with you. That first series would not be what I think of. It would be the one that Venditti wrote. And maybe I'm just partially Venditti, man. I don't know. That dude's freaking, he's so awesome. Yeah. But, and the other cool thing about this new, all new, but really not new Ninja K is, their relationship with Livewire is brought up in this. And it goes on for, I mean, I don't know, 6 pages maybe? And it's really interesting that the way that it's done. So, what's really fascinating about this is how, to me at least, in this one issue, Christos Gage has really humanized Colin King in a way that we haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, so you and I have talked, one of my favorite iterations of Ninjak was like the buddy comedy that he had with Eternal Warrior, with Gilad in Unity, especially during this time of Armor Hunters. And like, well, that plays out great. You can't do something like that for a solo series. And then in the series that Matt was doing, it was more like the story focused on what was happening around Ninjak and not so much about Ninjak. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this really seems to be a lot more character focused. And like, oh God, there was so much awesome, dude. Like, there's it. This Ninja K almost felt like Batman to me. And I know some other people have compared the Ninja K or Ninjak Colin King to Batman and Bruce Wayne. But like, I really felt it here because you do see both sides of this guy's personality in this book. And, like, there's some really tender moments when he's talking to Livewire about whatever it is that they're doing. Because it's like they have a relationship, but they're not together. And so you learn how that plays out for each of them. And I don't know. It really hit me, right? It almost feels like the amount of character work that was done in this book, I feel like very few writers for Valiant have done something like this, aside from maybe what Venditti did with Exo, and absolutely for sure what Dysart did with Harbinger. Because, you know, what I really loved about Dysart's Harbinger was the amount of character development, right? When you came into the book, you knew you were reading about Pete or Chris or, you know, whoever. And all the stuff that happens around them, but it's not thrown in your face. You're learning about all that stuff through the eyes of that particular character. And you get that here, even through the stuff that happens in the past, like 70 years in the past. And it was just amazing to read. I can't wait for you to read it, man.
Then I shall.
You should. Do it now!
I'm actually reading Faith in the Future Force number 4 right now because I have to progress through all the comics I'm behind on to get to the Ninja K comic.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, you know, so we were going to be doing a patron exclusive episode, which we're still going to do, talking about Criminal.
Well, before you go on, let's do that right now. I'm going to shout out the patrons.
Okay.
So thank you to the patrons for the continued support. So we'll be we're thanking Julian F, Milo is acting up, Michael S, Travis W, Michael C, JL, Justin E, Tim T, and I'm gonna shout Ronnie out too, because he's on here. He's not at the special get a shout out on the podcast level, but he's on here, and since he's my son, I'm gonna shout him out.
Maybe you shouldn't have done the dollar level.
So, if you want to hear Paul and I talk about other things that are not Valiant related, even though we do that on this podcast sometimes, we do a few Patreon exclusive episodes every month. We've done one on Gotham by Gaslight. What else did we do? Ether by Matt Kent. We had done a Hoopla Comixology Unlimited episode, like, I don't know, a month and a half ago for the patrons. And matter of fact, I just put that out on the Nerd Legion feed yesterday. So if you want to check that out as a teaser of what you can get when you become a patron, go check that out. And yes, apparently Paul and I had different ideas of what we're doing tonight. But our next episode will be on Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' Criminal, Volume 1, which is the first 5 issues. So if you're a patron, you'll get that probably this week. If you're not, well, then you should go be a patron. You can go to patreon.com/Valiant Central Podcast and sign up now. Do it!
Plus we just need to get one more patron to get to our goal of 10 patrons and begin doing something new for the patrons.
Correct. We need one more patron at our special level. And then Paul and I will be adding an additional episode to this podcast for everyone, not just for the patrons, for everyone. But we can't tell you what that is until we get this 10th person. And then once we get to the 10th, we'll be coming up with another level for more stuff. But anyways, continue, Paul. You were going to say something about Criminal.
Yeah, so obviously we're going to go more in depth on Criminal, but when I was reading it, because Brubaker is one writer that I've never really gotten into, but you know, one of those names that I've always known. Like one example is that Nick was always telling me to read Brubaker's Captain America, but you know, I mean, I don't really care much about Captain America, so it kind of needed to be the right place and time. So eventually, I did read it, and I'm not quite done with it. I've been reading through. I got quite a run of Brubaker Captain America from our friend Scotty, which was a nice thing that he did. He gave out. He had a segment of his collection that when he came back to the States to visit for the holidays, he basically gave them to whoever wanted them. And then you know, like, so I got those from him, and I'm passing them on to Sparky, and I'm sure they'll continue to have a life after that. But anyway, so I finally read Brubaker's Captain America. I'm not quite done with it entirely, but I've been reading it. And it's definitely good. That was the first Brubaker I've really read. I've never really been one for, like, the crime genre. You know, like, any genre, like, sometimes you like the genre, so good or bad, you like it, and so the kind of mediocre stuff you'll still like, but then the good stuff is, you know, real good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not really into that genre, then like a really good example of it you might still really like, but the stuff that's just kind of, you know, run of the mill, you probably won't like. Right?
Sure. Right.
So I was reading Criminal, and I just started reading the second volume, and like it's going down easy, you know. So it's like there's something about it that's different than it just being a crime book.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about it, because a lot of, you know, I mean, when did Criminal come out? When did it start?
Oh, early 2000s, no? 03? Yeah,
so if it was early 2000s, that's like kind of around the time when, like, late 90s, early 2000s is when digital art started becoming more prominent, and, like, my opinion is that a lot of art got a lot worse because people had tools that made it too easy, and they didn't know how to, like, push those tools to their limits yet.
All right, 2006. I just looked it up.
Okay, so it's a little bit after that. Yeah. You know, stuff started getting better. But, yeah, man, there's some stuff from the like, late 90s, early 2000s that I'm just... It's, you know, just disgusting. Like, the art, you could tell they were just given a tool that was too powerful, and they're not pushing it to any kind of limits because... it's new. It's too new to them, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So much comic suffered from that. It was terrible. But you can see kind of signs of the time. Like, you look at the covers to the trades, and like, they're not really that appealing visually. Like, you know, just the graphic design of them.
Right.
So from somebody coming in from the outside that's never read it, and even though I know Brubaker's name. Brubaker's name isn't a "you gotta read this" point to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Ennis's name, where Ennis's name is like, you probably want to avoid this, because I just know I don't really like Ennis. So reading it, I was like, this is going down really easy. And I was thinking about why, and it all comes down to, I mean, this is kind of what you were just going on with Ninjak and a few other things, but you have to be able to make readers care about the characters. It doesn't matter how interesting the story is. If I don't give a shit about the characters, the story, it doesn't matter. It could be like the most interesting, you know, twisted web of a story, and like, you know, like all these different things about it could be great on paper. But if I don't care about the people that are going through the story, then it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are a lot of comics, I think, that suffer from that. But like Secret Weapons, that was one of its big strengths, is you really cared about the characters in that book.
Right, right, right.
And from what you're saying about Ninja K, it sounds like it's digging a lot deeper into making you care about the characters.
Yep.
I think that, you know, Ninjak, how he's been presented over everything before, that's been a kind of a back and forth, a hit and miss thing at times. Like, there's times where you learn a little bit more about him, and you have that, you know, more of a buy-in to it, but like, if you look at the whole run of the Ninjak series that Matt Kent did, like, I feel like at times all the buy-in that he built up over time kind of started getting lost in the story at times, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, you get towards the end and, like, you find out more about who Roku is and all these different things, but, like, at some point you're just kind of like, this is just getting to be too much. You know, like, do I really care about Roku? You know, do I care about the girl that she was? Do I care about Ninjak? Do I care that, you know, Colin King was in love with this girl? You know, like, there's just too many things going on. So what you're saying sounds like it's kind of really digging into the characters and not getting lost in the story. Like, I think that the Ninjak series as a whole kind of did.
Yeah, no, I think that's it too, right? It's almost like I didn't care about the whole cast of characters, right? Because all I was focusing on was them going to the dark side to get Shadow Man, or him, or learning about the villains. Because really, like, when you started meeting the Shadow Seven, I felt more invested in the Shadow Seven than I did in Ninjak himself.
Yeah, and that was the point that the series was the best, is when you were learning about the Shadow Seven and seeing all that. And I think at that point, like, who Ninjak was had been established enough that it's okay to just tell a story with the Ninjak and unveil these other characters. You know, not every story has to be a deep character study, but we know who Ninjak is. We know who Colin King is. Even if not fully, we know enough, you know? Mm. So as you're discovering who, I don't remember all their names, but first you have the really big guy, and Roku's like his, enforcer, you know. So like, those characters are really compelling. You're drawn into it. But as the whole series goes on, suddenly you're getting jerked into these other stories, like them going to the dead side and stuff like that. And that felt a lot like editorial saying, "Hey, we want to do this thing, so we're gonna like make your book be a part of it."
Right, right, right.
And I think that was disruptive. And over time, those other characters started becoming props, and that ruined the value you had built up in them. You know, especially when you get to the end of the series, and like, they're all going to the dead side to chase Master Dark at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just turned them all into some props. So it, you know, kind of eroded what they had built up with all these different characters.
Yep.
You get to the end and they unveil more about Roku and who she was, who she is, how she got that way. But I don't know. Like, I could probably do to read it again, but like, I don't feel like by the end I cared more about Roku than I did at the beginning when I didn't know a damn thing about her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And see, so like, when we have our private chats on Discord, right, in our group, like, you guys bring up a lot of slice of life books. Like, you know, Jack and Ronnie love Southern Bastards. And, like, I don't. I'm like, if I want to see some Southern Bastards, I'll just walk down the street. You know what I'm saying?
Before you go on there, I want to make one little point about that.
Sure.
I think that slice of life books, like the books that some folks on our group, like Southern Bastards, you just said, like, that's taking a slice of life and making it as fucking nasty as possible.
All right, fine. But
just, like, reveling in it.
All right, so what about books that you, like, the stuff that you like? So, like, what's the new Jeff Lemire? Royal City?
Yeah, well, that's
Essex
what
County?
I was
gonna, yeah.
As, because I'm just, the reason I'm saying this is the term slice of life gets applied to things that, like, I find to be fairly different.
Sure.
Like, Southern Bastards and... I haven't read enough of Royal City to say, but, like, say Roughneck, which I guess you haven't read that yet, but right. They are both slice-of-life books. Like, Southern Bastards is, like, representing, like, that's kind of real-life stuff, but it's just kind of funny that, like, that term gets used kind of in the same way mm-hmm. amongst all of us to describe, you know, the books that I'm more drawn to that is more, like, you know, rooted in real life and there's not those extravagances and exaggerations.
Yeah, yeah.
And the stuff that, like, you know, like Southern Bastards or I mean, just like all of Ennis's stuff is kind of like that, where it's a slice of life, but it's like a slice of life with the sickest fucking people you could find
mm-hmm.
and then, like, turned up a notch and then, you know, just create. It's just funny, like, how a term could be applied so widely, because Ronnie will use slice of life to describe what I read. And then, you know, we'll use it to describe what he reads, but, like, you wouldn't call those two things the same thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, you could probably even apply some of that to stuff that is not real life. It just depends on how to do it, right? So, like, let's say a post-apocalyptic book. Let's take one that you really hate, for example, like Crossed. Like, if we were in the post-apocalypse, Crossed would be a slice of life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, see, I think that's stretching. That's where I think, like, the books like Southern Bastards, I don't know. I mean, you could argue that that's slice of life, because you could say, like, that shit really is like that somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when I think slice of life, it's kind of like looking at somebody's life. Like, nothing, like more simple. You know, this is just like life for somebody. Like, you're just reading something that's reveling in what normal life is.
Right.
Whereas a book like Southern Bastards is extreme life.
Yep.
You know, a book like Roughneck is a washed-up hockey player that is working as a janitor, living in the ice rink, going to the bar at night. It's just normal life shit. Like, yeah, he has a fucked-up life. Not everybody has a fucked-up life. But it's all just normal life shit. You know, mm-hmm. everybody deals with that shit in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think it's interesting that, like, terms can be applied so differently. And it's not that it's incorrect or anything. It's just... yeah, it shows that there's a wide... there's definitely a wide variety of stuff for everybody's tastes.
Yep. Yep. No, I agree. And the thing is, so... I prefer... more fiction-y stuff than slice of life stuff. And by slice of life, I mean, like, more realistic things, right? I like the superhero stuff, the mutant stuff, superpower stuff, science fiction stuff, aliens, whatever, like, crazy stuff. But at the same time, I like techniques that are used in a quote-unquote slice of life book. Apply to my superhero books. Like, I don't want a boring ass superhero comic, you know? Like, it's fine every so often as a palate cleanser, but I wouldn't want that all the time.
Yeah.
I like strong character development, and whatever happens around it happens around it. But that's what I mean by, like, I want a little slice of life. God, why is that hard to say? In my comics. You know, my wife makes fun of me because I like watching... I watch all the superhero TV shows, of course. But the one thing about most TV superhero shows is they're really kind of like soap operas. You know? It's like, you know, wrestling. You love watching wrestling. Wrestling is a soap opera for men. Right? And she makes fun of me all the time because I'll go and like sit down and I'll watch, start watching like Flash or Arrow, which Flash is not very good this season, but I'll start watching shows like that, and she's like, "Oh, you're putting your soap operas on. I'm gonna go watch whatever my 600 pound life or whatever else, you know, quality programming." But I just like that. You know, like we always refer back to like Claremont's X-Men, but I think that's what made that really good, is that it had that, right? It tackled real world issues, but in the disguise of a superhero comic. And not every writer can do stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? So it's really nice to have a really solid book like Ninja K in the Valiant stable. Because I don't feel like we've really had that for a little while, you know, aside from Secret Weapons, which is still fan-freaking-tastic.
Yeah, you know, like you were just saying about Slice of Life, talking about, you know, what you like to watch, and then your wife wants to go watch My 600-Pound Whatever the Fuck You Said. that's just another example to illustrate the difference between, like, different kinds of Slice of Life. Like, Southern Bastards is, like, the equivalent of My 600-Pound Whatever the Fuck. Because it's exaggerated slice of life. It's taking a segment of life and like taking like the most grotesque examples of it and then exaggerating it further, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that compared to, you know, I don't know. Like, I don't know what the hell the slice of life I watch is. PBS. I don't know.
Fuck. You don't watch PBS.
Yeah, I do. Shit.
I don't believe it.
A lot of good stuff there, man.
Is there? Name one.
Sesame Street.
That's on HBO.
That is Life on the Street. That's the street that terrifies Daryl the most, because it's just full of Muppets.
Yep. Yep. And he can't get away by getting Uber Eats, so there's that.
Nope.
Hey, I still haven't seen a new Valiant podcast episode.
That's because it doesn't exist.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Hey, you do know that Daryl would become good friends with Oscar the Grouch, though, right? They would hit it right off, because Daryl would be like, "What's with all these motherfucking Muppets?" And Oscar would be like, "Yeah, that's what I've been saying." They'd get along right away.
That's so true. So, so very true. Anyways, that's the only topic I had for tonight, Paul.
Yeah, which wasn't the topic we agreed upon or prepared for or anything like that. But, you know, it was a topic still.
Yeah, it was very Valiant-y. We got to talk Valiant once in a while.
So I'm a little bummed out. So I was hoping that Valiant would have a, you know, a Black Friday-ish type of sale. So they did. They had a Cyber Monday sale in Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a trade sale.
Yeah.
I want a fucking issue sale. I've bought hundreds of issues of Valiant Comics in individuals for a dollar an issue. I don't want trades. I don't want to spend $7 for four issues because you make me buy it in a bundle.
Yeah, I don't like that either. Although, fortunately, all I did was I repurchased some single issues on Comixology. But now that I'm moving from physical to all digital, save for two books. Actually, I'm getting those two books, physical and digital. Damn it! Anyways, except for those two books, I don't know if maybe I should, like, convert my stuff all to digital. So, like, if I travel, I can have it with me. But then I think about it, I'm like, how often do I travel? You know, like,
and do you need everything when you travel? No, you don't.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I don't take my tablet to work because I don't have time to read at work, unlike some of our friends.
Yeah, jerks.
Jerks. So anyway, I don't know. I haven't decided yet. But yeah, I mean, it would have been a good time to get in on it. But you're right. I don't understand why they do that. Like, DC did the same thing this week. For Black Friday, they had single issues. But then they had another sale Sunday going into Monday, and it was just trades.
Yeah, you know, both are fine. And like the one thing I've said this before with Comixology is if you want something that you've seen on sale, just wait, it'll be on sale again. It's like when I first read Hellboy, I bought the first six volumes in trades, and it was $6 a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't want to pick up single issues after that point. I already had the first six in trade. So then the next few sales that involved Hellboy were single issue sales.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, I don't want that. I want the trades. I don't want to mix. But eventually I ended up purchasing physical, the library hardcovers, library edition hardcovers, but, sure. Still, you know, it's like, I don't like mixing. It's like, it's fine to have trades. It's fine to have single issues. I don't want a mix of both.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, you kind of do one or the other, but the nice thing about sales on trades is a lot of times, like, they get to be really cheap. Yeah, and then when you stop and think about it, sometimes a single issue is like, you feel like the trade's such a great deal because it's like Image is having a sale on Comixology, and a lot of their Volume 1 trades are on sale for like $3.
Right.
So right. You're like, holy crap, that's a great deal. But how often are those four issues? So you're basically saving $1 on if it was a $1 an issue sale, but then Volume 2 is like $7. So you're spending $7 for four issues on Volume 2 if you do it that way. And a lot of times trades hold more than four issues. It depends on, you know, various factors. But yeah, it pays to think about it. Cause I know like I was always kind of a little more reluctant to spend $1 for a single issue of a comic, but then like really thinking about it, a lot of times with trades, even getting a good deal on a trade, you're spending more than $1 issue on digital comics.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
It's yeah, you're right.
Well, yeah, I don't like the mix.
The other thing, too, is Comixology Unlimited has a large portion of the Image Volume 1s.
Mm-hmm. That's why they're so cheap now.
Yeah, so, like, I'm not... Like, $3 for trade is a fantastic deal. But, like, I'm already giving them $6 a month. And I can just read them whenever. Like, I'm not going to want to read those over and over again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So why bother? Why bother? Anyways, you got anything else to discuss, Paul?
No, I don't think so. I mean, other than Criminal, but you know,
well,
whatever.
One of us didn't read it, so there's that.
You know, I guess like the only other thing that's been bouncing around my head a lot lately. Obviously, I'm behind on my Valiant reading, which I'm actually working on catching up on as we speak. But one of the things that, you know, different conversations that I've had with different people, like our friend Chris on Twitter, I was talking with him, who does the Boom podcast, if I'm correct.
Yeah, Chris Parton.
Yeah. So he was talking about, you know, ditching out on Batman.
Yep.
And talking about how long he's read it and stuff like that. And, you know, it's hard to make those decisions. I think he had tweeted out saying, you know, who's read a book for over 5 years, and then like, you know, what would make you leave a book that you've read for over 5 years? That's
yeah,
what he
something
asked.
Like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought about it a little bit and responded. And the only book that I've read that's been coming out for over 5 years is Ninja Turtles.
Right.
And like with that, it would, I mean, there are the factors that are kind of like don't have to do with the comic, like money. I mean, aside from money, the only thing that's going to make me stop reading Ninja Turtles would be if I just was like got to the point where I was like, I don't care about this property anymore. But I mean, the reason I read it in the first place is because I love the property. So realistically, like for me to stop reading that would be for me to like just be like, I'm done with comics. I'm too adult for this, you know? Mm. But a lot of people will read books for so long without really liking them. And that's where I think it's, you know, where it gets interesting is like, I mean, how many people out there are reading? I mean, I've been reading one title for over 5 years.
Sure.
How many people have been reading so many titles for over 5 years? What are the odds that you like the same thing after 5 years, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know, like a lot of different things. Like I've been going through a lot of myself, like reassessing stuff and, you know, how do I enjoy stuff? Do I really enjoy it? Am I making it more of a burden? And, like one thing is deciding to switch from physical to digital has been a huge relief. And like, I've just been getting, I spent $60 mailing stuff out the other day. it's just like crazy to think like I spent that much money to get rid of stuff, to get it to people who like I made deals with, I gave some stuff away, you know, traded some stuff, whatever. But yeah, it's really like my perspective is so different because I've gone from a perspective of like always working on acquiring the things that I quote love the most, to like owning stuff digitally. It's like you own it to consume it, not to have it sit on a fucking shelf, you know? So it doesn't like, it doesn't do you any good to own digital stuff if you're not going to read it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I have a whole bunch of stuff to read. And I've been working on some of that stuff. Like I'm rereading Lock and Key right now. And having that big tablet screen instead of the little tablet screen makes all the difference in the world on how enjoyable it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like I had, you know, I really love Usagi Yojimbo. And I had the slipcover omnibuy that collected the Fantagraphics stuff. And I had all of the Dark Horse omnibuy that collected everything after Fantagraphics. Well, those are really affordable on Comixology. And they're just like, I mean, they're nice, inexpensive omnibuy. But they're still just inexpensive omnibuy. I mean, it's black and white because that's how it was originally made.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, it's dense. There's a lot of stuff in there. So I was just thinking, I was like, why do I need these physically when I can have them digitally? They're going to be easier to read digitally. I can take them around with me digitally. I'm not trying to read a big fat book. And that's one where it's like, I really love the property. So like, you know, it's the battle in your head of the, I want to own this because I love it. And like, what does owning it matter, you know?
Sure.
So it's like if I had the hardcovers, they have some, like, really nice hardcovers that are, like, the same things, but, like, leather-bound hardcovers that are freaking expensive.
Mm-hmm.
If I had those, like, those I would be keeping if I had them. But, you know, the like, $30 cover price omnibuy, it's like, yeah, you know, I could pick those up on the sale for, like, $7 or $8 each and, you know, just be happier with it.
Yep.
So it's been a big mind shift with stuff. So it's like, you know, I bought a few things, but I sold more than I bought to, you know, to offset the cost, even though like the stuff I sold for so cheap that like it was good deals for the people I sold it to. You know, but it's just, you know, offloading that stuff and like not having the burden of all these possessions. And like, I'm really just focused on enjoying what I'm reading instead of feeling like I have to. You know, I have to do these things. And then you buy all these comics. Like, how many people have their... I mean, you've gone through this. I mean, you've... What was your peak monthly comics you were buying?
Pretty close to 100.
100 fucking comics a month. Like, if I had a pile of 100 comics to read, period, I'd be like, fuck, I gotta get going on this stuff. This is too much stuff. But to get that shit coming in every fucking month is insane.
Yeah, I know.
And, I mean, like... You've cut way back from that. I mean, you may still be reading the same amount that you're reading, but you're doing it in a different way, and it's not that same kind of burden. Some people might love it. You know, I mean, some people, maybe they have the time to read all that stuff, or they really – some people can have, you know, huge back stocks of stuff and not be bothered by it.
Yeah, I'm at about like 25 right now.
So you get like 25 comics a month. Like that's more doable. But like for me, I would rather focus on reading – complete stories and focus. Like, I just pounded through a whole crap load of issues of 100 Bullets because I wanted to finish it before it had to digitally go back to the library. You know, and I mean, that's a lot of issues of comics, but it's, you know, it's like if I kept rolling on that, if I really didn't like it, I could just ditch it, and I'd be confident in ditching the, like, the 10 issues that were left or whatever, you know? But yeah, getting all those, and I mean, man, how much individual comics cost? Like, it's a burden. And then if you have all these comics, and you're like, I don't even want to. Then like, how much money are you just saying I don't want to too? You know. But you know, it's like you got to figure that stuff out and figure out like what's really bringing you enjoyment or not, and not just be burdened by feeling like I have to with all this stuff.
Yep.
Because I mean, what percentage of the comics you buy do you think are worth more at some point after you buy them compared to just drastically less?
Worth more, like, in terms of resale?
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, I don't care about that.
That's not what I'm asking. How many, like, if you are buying 100 comics a month the way that you were, how many of those do you think are worth more after the fact, as opposed to less after the fact.
Maybe a tenth of them?
Probably not even that. Yeah. Like, how most comics don't go up in value nowadays, especially, you know? I mean, maybe after a long, long time, but, you know, the point is you're spending all that. I mean, 100 comics a month, if you're not getting a discount, which I know, of course, you were, but that's $400 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That is decreasing in value as soon as you buy it. That even though the rare ones that may go up in value aren't worth it. So if you don't get them as they're coming out, if you want to go back and read them, there's always ways to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I just think that it's good. Like, I've been talking to more and more people who are really looking at how they're doing things and, like, reassessing to make sure that they're doing things to get enjoyment out of it and not just to do it because they have to.
Right, right, right.
And I think that's what people should focus on.
And they should focus on reading Ninja. Or Ninja K.
Yeah, it's, say it right.
Because it's the best. All right, we're going to wrap this episode up. I don't even know what episode number we're on, Paul. I don't put episode numbers on the website anymore. Like, there's no episode numbers in the feed or anything, because collectively we decided it doesn't really matter what episode number we're on. So
I think it's 152.
Well, I think it's 153, because I think 152 is the panel that I put out today.
Oh, well, yeah, that I wouldn't register that in my brain because I wasn't on it.
Uh-huh. So, somewhere up there. Anyway, this has been an episode of the Valiant Central Podcast, where this week we talked Valiant. Dun-dun-dun. Let's see, Paul's at Who's Paul on Twitter. Because no one knows who Paul is. I'm at Geekvine. We are at Valiant_Central. And be sure to check out the website and all the other podcasts, nerdylegion.com. And that's it. We'll be back next week. Have a good one. And don't forget, patreon.com/Valiant Central Podcast.